Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology. We learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining with us today. Let's get started. Did you know that on jamesmillerlifeology.com, you can enroll in the academy I created for listeners just like you? I've created courses you may take at your own pace, which will help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. Enroll in one of the classes today. I have a great show for you today. I'm going to help you overcome adversity in your life. I'll also be interviewing author Rayfield Walker, who shares his book, Out of the Jungle, The Jungle Boy. This memoir shares how he overcame much adversity as a horribly abused boy in Guyana and how his story is helping to inspire others to overcome the struggles they too may face. You may purchase this book on Amazon or on jamesmillerlifeology.com. Purchase this book today. I have some exciting news. Did you know that I'm on the radio 3 times a week? You may hear me on this same station on Tuesdays at 1:30 p.m., Fridays at 9:30 a.m., and Saturdays at 12:30 p.m. You may also hear me on iHeartRadio, as well as on all the other major podcasting platforms, such as iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and many others. Simply search for the show name, James Miller Lifeology. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but some of you may not yet know me as a composer. I currently have 2 albums which have been released. Think of both albums like books. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. The first album, Consolation, explores a character's grief and loss. And just like in any book, the story explores a character's heartache and eventually he finds healing and hope. The second album, Restoration, explores a character's personal development. He has an awakening, and in that awakening, he recognizes all the things in his life which aren't healthy, and it helps him come to a place of restoration, being restored to something greater than before. You may purchase both albums on iTunes or any other digital music store. The names of the albums are Consolation and Restoration, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is from the second album, Restoration, entitled Awakening. Once upon a time, a daughter complained to her father that her life was miserable and that she didn't know how she was going to make it. She was tired of fighting and struggling all the time. It seemed just as one problem was solved, another one soon followed. Her father, a chef, took her to the kitchen. He filled 3 pots with water and placed each on a high fire. Once the 3 pots began to boil, he placed potatoes in 1 pot, eggs in the 2nd pot, and ground coffee beans in the 3rd pot. He then let them sit and boil without saying a word to his daughter. The daughter moaned and impatiently waited, wondering what he was doing. After 20 minutes, he turned off the burners. He took the potatoes out of the pot and placed them in a bowl. He pulled the eggs out of the pot and placed them also in a bowl. He then ladled the coffee out and placed it in a cup. Turning to his daughter, he asked, "What do you see?" "Potatoes, eggs, and coffee," she hastily replied. "Look closer," he said, "and touch the potatoes." She did and noted that they were very soft. He then asked her to take the egg and break it. After pulling off the shell, she observed the hard-boiled egg. Finally, he asked her to sip the coffee. Its rich aroma brought a smile to her face. "Father, what does this mean?" she asked. He then explained that the potatoes, the eggs, and the coffee beans had each faced the same adversity, the boiling water. However, each one reacted differently. The potato went in strong, hard, and unrelenting, but in boiling water, it became soft and weak. The egg was fragile, with a thin outer shell protecting its liquid interior until it was put into the boiling water. Then the inside of the egg became hard. However, the ground coffee beans were unique. After they were exposed to the boiling water, they changed the water and created something new. "Which one are you?" he asked his daughter. "When adversity knocks on your door, how do you respond? Are you a potato, an egg, or a coffee bean?" Overcoming adversity. There is an old saying that says, "Rain falls on the just and the unjust," meaning that life is going to happen. Unfortunately, there will be times in our life when situations happen and we're uncertain of what to do. This adversity can be at the hands of someone else, or it could be from choices and decisions that we've made. Anytime we experience adversity, we will often feel lost, hopeless, fear, doubt. All of these very powerful emotions will plague our mind. When that happens, it's important to implement some of these techniques we're going to talk about today. In the past, I've talked about the initial reaction we have and then the choices we make after that. For example, if I come up and startle you, your automatic response is going to be scared. But if you stay scared for the next hour, well, that doesn't make sense. It's the same type of thing. When we experience adversity initially, our initial reaction is to feel so overwhelmed, so overcome, and feel like there's no way out. But then, just like that hour of being afraid, then it changes, and then we determine how long we're going to feel as if there's no way out or nothing's going to change. Now, I talk about this in a very practical way. By no means am I minimizing what you've experienced or perhaps what you're experiencing right now, but I want to give you some tools and techniques to consider or to try when you go through adversity. One of the first things to really ask yourself when you're going through this adversity is, when have I felt something like this before? Now, the situation may be completely different, but you felt fear, you felt doubt, you felt hopeless, you felt despair, you felt all those emotions before. Now, when you think back on those times, what did you do to overcome those feelings? And once again, the intensity of those emotions may be totally different, but you've experienced it before. So what did you do? How did you change your perspective? How did you change your mind? How did you get yourself back on track? It's important to reflect on when you felt it and what did you do, because that's actionable information that you can use to overcome it again. Sometimes when we're struggling so much, we can't remember those types of things. So it's always good to ask a close friend or someone who knows your history who can really remind you of what's happened. And of course, you want to surround yourself with these amazing people who are going to support you and love you and help you. And in doing that, you'll be able to rely on their sense of hope, their sense of peace that they exude or that they can give you. And when you listen to what they say, the advice they may give you, the love they may show you, that is going to be the strength you need to then switch over into your own mind to say, all right, is this going to be a stumbling block or is it going to be a stepping stone? Remember, what you're going through today is not who you are. If you've been abused, if you are going through a divorce, a heartache, a sickness, a bankruptcy, there's so many things we can experience that are so powerful, but that is not who you are. That is simply an event you are going through. If you call yourself what that event is, in other words, if you call yourself the divorced person or the brokenhearted person or the bankrupt person or the abused person, and once again, I'm not minimizing what you've experienced, but if we believe that that's now the new identity we have, then that's what we're going to be. So remember, what you're going through is an event and not who you are. So that means the self-talk you have, in other words, what you say to yourself over and over again in your mind, determines how this can become a stepping stone. So if you tell yourself, I'm always going to be this way, or my life is always going to hurt like this, or I'm always going to be poor, I'm always going to be brokenhearted, I'm always going to be devastated, that is going to be what you become. Think of a coin. If you take a coin and you bring it closer to your eye, that's all you're going to see. It's the same type of thing with your thoughts. The more you focus on a thought, the more that thought is to become bigger and bigger until that's all you think about. So that's why it's important to have your friends give you different thoughts to think about and support you. That's why it's important for you to change your self-talk to say, this is going to be a stepping stone and not a stumbling block. Remember, everything ends, meaning every situation in your life will end and a new situation will arise. When this cycle of adversity ends, what's going to come out of it? That is what you can focus on. There may be things you can't change right now. Let's say you are experiencing some severe adversity right this second, and it feels like there's nothing you can do. Well, what you can do is focus on what you think. What are your options? Surrounding yourself with your friends. Those are the tools you can use. So therefore, once it does end, because it will end, you've already started the healing process for yourself to once again use this as a stepping stone and not a stumbling block. My friend, I'm so sorry you have experienced adversity, but I'm confident there is a way out for you. I'm confident there's still hope for you. I'm confident that you are going to overcome this adversity and become something greater than what your circumstances have told you you're going to be. So let these words sink in. The adversity is going to end. Use it as a stepping stone and not a stumbling block. A quick example of one of the courses you'll find in the Academy entitled When All Hell Breaks Loose. We've all experienced those times when nothing seems to go right. This class will specifically train you how to process the event, regroup, and use what was thought as a stumbling block and turn it into a stepping stone. Enroll in the class today. My guest today is Rayfield Walker, an aspiring artist, filmmaker, and recently published author of the amazing book Out of the Jungle, The Jungle Boy. His memoir is a powerful story which instills hope and inspiration for all who read it. He recounts years of physical, emotional, and sexual abuse from his father and relatives. It depicts the grim reality of his life in Guyana. Despite enduring horrifying and repeated abuse, Rayfield fought for his life with an iron will and utter determination. He found refuge in his grandparents' home, where his grandmother instilled in him important virtues and strengths of character. He is joining us today from New York City, where he continues to fulfill his dream of inspiring and helping others through his powerful story. Welcome to my show, Rayfield.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm really excited to talk about your memoir and all the amazing things that are happening in your life today. You know, you've been through so many powerful, traumatic things in your life, but the person that I'm speaking with today is an amazing, inspirational beacon of hope for all who he talks to. So thank you once again for joining with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So your book itself, that is a personal book. It's a nonfiction memoir specifically depicting how you grew up, all the things that you went through, and then stops where you're at today in New York City. Is that correct?
Yeah, it actually stops where my graduation. That's where I stopped it.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Tell us about how you grew up.
I grew up in a small village in Guyana that's called Supply, and it's located on the east bank of the Demerara River. Most people that is familiar with Guyana know Georgetown, but just on the coast off of Georgetown is the east bank of the Demerara River, and that's the village that's Supply. But I grew up with my grandparents.
Did you live with your parents as well?
I never lived with my parents. My parents got me my mom got me at the age of 17. My dad was 18, and my parents was too young to take care of me.
Sure.
And just after leaving the hospital with my mom, after my mom gave birth to me, I found out from my grandmother and also my mom that I used to live with my dad and his mother in Georgetown, Guyana, and numerous times my dad and his mom, they were pretty much abusive, and I used to be back and forth into the hospital, and it would be times where I would leave to go at my grandmother's house in Supply, which is my mother's mom, and the minute I got there, everything would be fine, no problem, you know.
The life of stability there with your grandmother.
Yeah, there was a lot of stability, and my grandmother took upon me just to say, you know what, after weeks of taking me there numerous times, my grandmother was like, my mom's was like, leave him here, he's not going back. And from the age of 1 year old, I continued to stay there with my grandmother and my grandfather.
Wow. And I'm so sorry to hear that as an infant that you went through that physical abuse. I can't even imagine what that's like. I know, unfortunately, that happens so much in the world that we just don't know it. But I'm so glad to hear that you had people, your grandparents and your mother, who were able to say, no, enough is enough. You're going to live with your grandparents. So I'm so glad to hear that. Now, as you grew up, though, there were times when your father was very abusive still. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so that specifically of itself occurred after my grandmother took me, and I wasn't seeing my dad. Nobody was seeing me. So I was always closed in with my grandparents in Supply. And my mom pushed a matter of saying, you know, maybe he needs a man in his life. Maybe he needs his father. You know, maybe he should build a relationship with his father. So I started visiting back my father at the age of like 3-4 years old. And my dad, they weren't accustomed of actually having me around. Because my grandmother had hated my dad and his mom for the way they used to treat me as a baby.
So, makes sense.
So it would always be a problem between my mother and her mother. So it would always be a back and forth. You know, why you want him to go to his father, you know? And there's times when my mom actually took me to my dad's house, my grandmother would be calling just to check up on me. My dad, he didn't pretty like that. So, but the abuse of itself started in a really bad way, because my dad, he's kind of like what they consider to be trapped in the closet. You know, he's bisexual, but it's like on lockdown where he doesn't want anybody in the family to know.
Sure.
There's some relatives in the family that knows, but they're holding it down for him. So the effect in Guyana now, at that time, while I was young in Guyana, you know, for you to consider yourself bisexual and wanted to be with the same sex, you know, it was very bad, you know, because people didn't really stand for it, you know, and it was something that was scorned. So with the way all my grandparents was treating him, you know, and they was reacting to him of having me around, and it would seem like I had the best life, you know, a life that he never had, which wasn't true. But then he just found that in a way of like, okay, I'm going to take out that anger on that little boy.
And, you know, the whole, you know, hearing that, of course, to hear how, regardless of if he's your father or not, to hear that an adult male would abuse a child, a toddler, is inconceivable. It's in so many ways. I mean, people can try and justify that, regardless if he's in the closet, if he's bisexual, whatever the culture says is appropriate, but that's not acceptable in any culture. So I'm glad to hear that, of course, your grandparents were able to help you through that. Now, there were times when he locked you in the closet, in the cupboard for quite a while, right?
Yeah, it was numerous of times. My clothes would always be taken off, mm-hmm. and then I would get beaten with like a leather belt. And then after hours of being beaten with a leather belt, I would be put into the cupboard where he would lock me in there. And sometimes it would either be between the cupboard, the kitchen cupboard, like right now underneath the sink, mm-hmm. or those shipping drums where you ship things in, mm-hmm. those blue big yes. containers. It'll be one of those drums.
Could you breathe in that?
My stepmom, while my dad would leave to go to work, because he was expecting me to stay in there while he left the house. Mm-hmm. But my stepmom, she always came in and she would unlock it, take me out. But when he comes home, whenever he came home, she would have to put me back in, because sometimes he got really physical with her as well.
Mm. You know, as you're recounting this to me right now, I can't imagine what that must be like for you. I mean, that's trauma that many people have not experienced. How was that for you years later, when you're living your amazing life in New York City and you're going to community college and you're studying to be an artist, a filmmaker, a writer, all these things? How was that for you to hear how you were as a child versus who you are today?
Well, basically, I look at it in terms of a way. It was when I first started working on this book, because I was actually inspired to write this book. I've read Why Do Caged Birds Sing by Maya Angelou. I've read...
He's amazing, of course.
A Long Way Gone by Ishmael. I can't really pronounce his last name, uh-huh. but I think it's Ishmael Vesh. He's a very good writer. It talks about... And what I love about his book talks about... it talks about like how they used to take these kids and make them into... little soldiers, little, mm-hmm. And the way that how he explains it, how he explains the story of itself, describing the scenes, I've grasped on how to do that. But going back to how I came to write this book, my aunt, who used to babysit for this guy who's a filmmaker, he's technically still a filmmaker, but he was more into films in the 90s, where he used to, he was one of the first punk filmmakers of New York City, where oh, wow. he used to do indie films. His name is Amos Poe, and he's technically my mentor right now. He's a professor also at NYU.
Oh, and wow, that's neat.
And the reason how I met him, because my aunt, she was interesting, because, you know, it's like everybody used to hear about how the way my dad used to treat me. So it's like when they get to meet me on a family reunion or something, they'd be like, how you doing? You know, is you and your dad okay now? And She just happened to ask me, what are you doing with your life? You know, so I said, I'm going to school, I'm studying film. And she's like, that's great. She said, what are you interested in? I said, film, you know, I want to do screenwriting. So she told me she works with this guy who does film, which is Amos Poe. And she gave me his number, and I called him like immediately as soon as I went home.
That, after, sure.
that evening, I called him, and he said, you know, he sees he's going on vacation. He sees he's coming back August 1st. He said, just contact me as soon as you come back. So as soon as I come back, just contact me on August 1st, you know, because I didn't give him a chance to like wait until he came back and rest up. Immediately, like he told me August 1st, first thing I woke up, I gave them a call, and he actually didn't answer. So I called her back, and she said, just give him a week, you know, let him settle down and stuff. So I called him, and when I actually called him after a week, I got to him. I went over to his apartment. I showed him all the art that I was working with, all the poems, and I showed him that I told him I wanted to get into a good college where I could study film, because I told him I always had an inspiration of making movies and stuff like that, you know, because I love to write. Mm-hmm. So he said, you know, I told him my grades is not that well. So he said, what you got to do, you're a good artist, you're a good writer. He said, you came back from Guyana. People like those stories, you know, people like you. I know you've been through a lot of struggles and stuff like that, because my aunt shared with him, you know, the type of life that I've encountered in Guyana. And she said, and he said to me, he said, just write about it. You know, these people would love to hear that story and they could overlook certain things. So I said, okay. And I wrote 5, 6, 7 pages, and I stuck up to the part where I started remembering about those abuse. And I told him, I said, I can't do it no more. He said, why not? I said, there was a lot of bad things that happened to me. And he said, what are you talking about? And I started telling him about the abuse of my dad, what I've encountered with neighbors, with relatives. And he said, that's good. And then he left and he's like, but I mean, it's not good, but
sure.
He said, it's just great. You know, he said, and he turned to me and he said, what I want you to do, I would love for you to write a book. And I said, write a book. I said, I hardly know how to write, because I told him, and he's like, why not? AC? I said, I learned to read at the age of 12. And he's like, what are you talking about? You learned to read at the age of 12. I said, in Guyana, when I used to go to school, when my grandparents would send me to school, I used to go to school in the beginning of the in the morning, the teacher would mark your attendance and I would leave school so I could like go and work for rich neighbors, like far away, like in outer village. So I could accumulate money. So, cause my grandparents, they used to work to pay the bills, you know, like light bill, the water bill. But most of the time my grandparents lose their job, you know, so lights cut off.
Yeah.
You have to go miles of water. So the least I could have done, see myself doing is like, okay, I'm going to run errands with these people and accumulate money so I could buy a few bread or what's not, you know? And, I told him that's why I couldn't read. I said, and I ended up coming when I came to, but how I learned actually to read, and I forced myself to start reading. My stepmom, I actually came through my stepmom. My stepmom got to come in through her dad, and she, you know, of like from the time I used to visit them when my dad used to abuse me in my early childhood. She said, the least I could do for you is give you this opportunity to come here and, you know, be somebody, you know, you have better opportunities and you're very ambitious little boy. And, and she said, the only thing is in America, you know, you got to go to school. You know, like you could not go to school because the government is going to make sure you go to school. And she said, you have to learn how to read. And I started picking up the newspaper, started pronouncing words, trying. But I learned how to read in Ghana, but I couldn't understand what I was reading. I learned how to do that at the age of 15.
Wow. You wrote a book as well. I mean, that's so inspiring on so many levels. I'm not just because it's a book, but the adversity that you've overcome, the struggles that you had, and you're doing more than many people who have not gone through those things. So in other words, I mean, you've written a book. You're studying what you love. You are working as hard as you can. You've overcome so much adversity. So I really want to honor you with that. I really want to just give you, let you understand that this is an amazing, powerful journey that you've experienced, but it's one that many people would not have been able to respond to it in the way that you are currently responding to it.
Yeah, thank you.
And you're very welcome.
I came after I started school I started at Brooklyn College Academy. It's an early college high school. And in the first year of that school, my grades was a 17 average overall. The total grades was a 17 average. And they were going to take me outside. They could send me to a school that is not so high in standards and in academics. And I said, I just need to know how to understand what I'm reading. And they had this woman by the name of Miss Barbara Krongut. She's really nice woman. I actually went back a month ago and saw her, and she cried when I showed her the physical copy of the book.
Oh, really? That's amazing, Rayfield.
Yeah, what she used to do, she used to have me read the newspaper. She would have me take out read it as I could have read, words that I didn't understand and the meaning that was in the newspaper. I would take them out, define them, and make sentence back with them, you know. So then it allowed me to understand what I was reading.
Yes.
And after 3 years of doing that, I started my average started raising. I went from a 17 average to a 75.
Oh my goodness.
From a 17 to a 65, from a 65 to a 75, and from a 75 to a 80. And I started taking college classes in my school. I was receiving a lot of A's
That's
in
amazing.
These college classes because I graduated high school with 12 college credits.
Oh my gosh, Rayfield, to go from an average of 17% to taking 12 college courses, that's so inspiring. I can't even tell you how inspiring that is. That's absolutely amazing.
And then, And my GPA went from, I can't remember what the number were, but I know it was a 2.8, I remember it was a 2.8, and it went to a 2.9, and then I got to a 3.1.
Wow.
And
that's amazing. It's such a powerful, to think about that little boy who was skipping school so he could pay money or earn money running errands so that he could help his grandparents get food on the table, to now taking in college, working on something you love. I mean, what a huge difference from then versus now.
Yeah. And the same guy, Amos Poe, was my mentor. I didn't start a book all over again. From those same five pages in the essay that I had, I started continuing to write. And I actually did 15 drafts of this book, because when I started writing about the physical, the sexual abuse and these type of stuff, it was very hard for me to talk about it.
Of course it was.
And I talked to Amos about it, and I've talked to his son, I talked to his daughter, and it just opened me out, you know, by talking to people, and it really helps. By talking to people, it really helps, because then you felt like you don't have to carry that weight on your shoulder.
Yes, and there's a sense of shame that comes along with that too, a sense of shame and many other emotions as we talk about that or experience that. And knowing that these people love you and care about you and respect you and want to help you, it removes that sense of shame, because as you know, there's nothing you did that was wrong. And learning how to really be you, and people love you and accept you for you, regardless of anything in your life. And that's a beautiful gift as well.
Yeah. And that's why, like, I stand as of today, and I'm thinking about, you know, where they could be, you know, promoting the book, taking the book to a further level, you know, wanting people to hear this story. Mm-hmm. It's me trying to tell people, you know, and even kids, you know, most of all kids, you know, like, it's no matter what you've been through, you know, whether it was, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse, you know, there's nothing greater to know that you've been through the worst and you've made it out, you know, to become the best person you could be.
Yes.
Not to be better than anybody, but just to be the best person you could be. Regardless,
yes.
You know.
Regardless of what you've experienced, yes, you still are becoming, and even more so, even a year from now, you're going to be even the better version of yourself than you are today. And that's
exactly.
Amazing that you are moving forward to such a in such a powerful way.
Exactly.
What's next for you? So you finished up this book. You are taking classes and to be a filmmaker, a screenwriter. What more? What's next on the horizon for you?
So I'm actually having a grant. I'm going to try to get a grant to attend NYU, because I never got to go to the school because I took the essay and I turned it into the book. I never finished the essay, but now hence why I'm at this 2-year school right now. But you know, life takes us on a journey, and
yes,
you know, whatever you slack in, you know, it's not about, because in life you're gonna have plans and you're gonna fall off of the track. That's not the problem. You know, you're gonna do wrong things. But it's all about what you do after to prove yourself, to say, you know what, I'm going to keep going no matter what, you know, because
yes.
It's human to make mistakes, but it's what you do after, you know, how you pick up back those pieces and you put them together and you said, you know what, the sun awaits me and I'm no matter what, I'm going to get there. It might take me a while, but I know I'm going to get there.
Yes. Beautifully said, Rayfield. Rayfield, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on my show. There's so much more we could talk about. But if my listeners would like to find out more information about you and about your book, Out of the Jungle to the Jungle Boy, where would they find this information online?
So they could find the information on Outskirts Press. I just had a review from Kirkus Indie, and it's on my social media. So my Facebook name is Junior Ray Walker, and that also has information that shows you that also has the review. You could find me on Instagram, and that is Rafi Walker 22. I'm also on Twitter, and that's also Rafi Walker.
Are they able to purchase this book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
Yeah, you can find it on Amazon. You can find it on Barnes & Noble.
What I'm going to do, Rayfield, is I'm going to put your book on my site as well, my store, jamesmillerlifeology.com. If my listeners aren't able to find it on Amazon, simply go to my website. Once again, that's jamesmillerlifeology.com, and you can find Rayfield's book in my store, Out of the Jungle, The Jungle Boy. and you can purchase it right there. Rayfield Walker, thank you so much for being a guest on my show today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here. Thank you once again, and the best of luck, and I'm sure you're going to go so far in all the things that you do.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks again for having me onto the show.
It is my pleasure.
I also want to thank you, my listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this radio show through whichever portal you joined with me. Also, please go to my website where you may sign up for my newsletter, enroll in the Lifeology Academy, watch my YouTube episodes, and read all the articles I've written just for you. If you'd like to become a guest or advertise on my show, simply visit jamesmillerlifeology.com. You may also follow me on all social media platforms under the name James Miller Lifeology, except for Twitter, which is James M. Lifeology. Have a fantastic day, and I look forward to speaking with you very soon.